to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sairam and a warm good morning to all of you, dear listeners. Good afternoon or good evening too, depending on where you are listening to us from. Renparthi, it's indeed a fine morning. This is your friend from Team Radio Sai, Prem, welcoming you to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth, a show that you listeners and I do together, a show where listeners send me questions relating to day-to-day life, scenarios, problems or dilemmas, and I give answers on the basis of Swami's message. I have two questions this week too, and they are from two listeners who are in a spot of bother, but their issues are quite different nevertheless. But we'll come to them when we come to them. Now it's time for the quote of the week, where I impose on each one of you one of my favorite quotes with the hope you will find it as interesting and useful as I do. This week's quote is from a person who is my unrivaled favorite. He takes the first spot among my favorites, and is sure not going to lose that spot for like ever. If you're wondering who that is, it's Swami, of course. Yes, dear listeners, this week's quote I'm going to read is from one of Swami's discourses. And here it is. I quote, "Grief and joy are the obverse and reverse of the same experience. Joy is when grief ends. Grief is when joy begins." That's a short quote, so I think I'll read it again, and I hope you all pay attention, and it's a very, very beautiful and important message. Grief and joy are the obverse and reverse of the same experience. Joy is when grief ends. Grief is when joy ends. End of quote. So that quote is quite self-explanatory, and it's something we have heard many, many times from Swami. You know, Swami would say, "Na sukhat labhyate sukham." Happiness never comes from happiness. It is always born from grief. Well, in that sense, grief and pain is like the mother of happiness. Wow, do we ever look at grief that way? If we ever do, we will at least not be so afraid of it, isn't it? I'm not saying let's all be unhappy, but we will lose the fear and aversion we have for grief and pain. And as Swami says, the more that happens, we develop the attitude of vairagya or detachment. And it is only after vairagya comes, viveka or wisdom can dawn. That's why when we are so bogged down by grief, it is so very difficult to think straight, right? The more we accept that grief is as much a part of life as happiness is, we will be in a better state of mind to deal with problems at hand. Well, I'll stop here because we have questions to answer. And that's what this program is about, isn't it? So let's head to the questions of the day. The first question is from a brother who wishes to be anonymous. I don't know his name or place, but he's a student of Swami. That much I can gather from his question. A former student of Swami's educational institution, that is. But the listener has sent the question in his own voice, and I'm very grateful for that. So first, let's listen to the question, and then we'll discuss about the question and an answer for that.
Sai Ram Prem, it was very heartwarming to hear the Answering Booth program which has come up by Swami's grace. My issue is a family one which I am facing currently. I live with my wife, 4-year-old daughter and my mother. My father passed away in 2008. Since then I have been managing the household duties by catering to the needs of everyone else at home. I have been married since 2010, but my wife and mother never hit off. Constant quarrels, and they don't talk to each other at home. very limited speaking, like if there is something needed, they will speak, otherwise they will keep calm. I, being a Swami student, I would try to discuss with them and think what Swami wants me to do to solve this, but I was not successful at all. So when my wife keeps accusing me, calling me names of always being behind my mother, useful only for certain things and not worrying about her at all. But I know the converse is true, where I have not been able to regard my mother's feelings too many times and trying to balance out with my wife by keeping her happy all the times, by giving all sorts of material comforts. My mother, on the other hand, keeps mostly calm to herself, and she is not of the argumentative type. But she is a stickler for cleanliness, and you know, she is semi-traditional. So my wife, on the other hand, doesn't fit into all those things most of the time. So in December 2015, things went very far. So my wife woke up one day and started blasting all at home. We were engaged in a verbal argument, and since then she left home with my daughter to her parents' house. I have visited my in-laws' house umpteen number of times, almost every day, every weekend, trying to sort out things with them. But my in-laws and wife were too adamant to hear to whatever I am saying. They also started calling my mother names, as they believe she is the one who caused all this. And my wife also said that she would not come back until my mother is alive, or she would keep saying, like, till my mother is alive, nothing good will happen for our family. That's pretty far it has gone. And it's been 8 months since she moved out of the house, and my wife only wants one thing now, that I should stay in her house with her parents as her husband. Something which I never wanted to do, obviously, because one, my mother has no one else to look after, and I don't want to leave her alone. I have a younger sister who is away with her husband in the States. And again, two, if I take the drastic step of staying with my wife, I know I have to leave behind all the dignity and self-respect which I have earned for myself and for my family. We all might have done mistakes in the family. I know that, you know. It's like, no one is perfect. Everyone has done mistakes, but there needs to be a time when you should adjust to all of it and stay, because they are nothing compared to what has been meted out to us currently. Both me and my mother have never raised a hand on my wife, and most of the time when she was shouting, we just left her to settle down in the family to adjust, but it was not adjustable for her. On the other hand, I am facing the worst times now, being away from my daughter, whom I love so much, and I am not able to go to their house also, because I was very, I was very angry on them when they started calling my mother names and said that she is the reason for all this. And you know, that's the current situation. So, dear brothers, request your suggestion and response on what can be a solution for this. Because I have tried hard, I am not able to find any solution on what this can or where this can be taken to a closure. It's like a stalemate now. So, please let me if you need any more details. Sairam.
I really sympathize with you, brother, and I sincerely hope and pray things return to normal in your life. I have discussed about 12 questions so far in the program, and almost every person whose question was answered wrote back saying that they were already doing what was said in the program, or they were planning to do what was just said, and the answer kind of reaffirmed that for them. I think that exactly is the idea of the program, because each of us get the solution to our problems from within. The answer you get here should only amplify and clarify that voice from within. Well, in that sense, brother, I think what you're doing so far is quite right. So to start with, let me tell you why what you're doing is right. Maybe that will help you to continue that and also look for solutions in that same direction. As children, Swami would say that at no cost we must abandon our duties towards our parents, right? In fact, we've heard Swami say many times that gratitude is man's primary virtue. He says that even devotion to God is perfect when it is approached as an expression of gratitude. And you are a Swami student. We all have heard Swami tell us in almost every convocation address, make your parents happy, take good care of them, get a good name for them. So you not letting go of your mother and trying to be with her in this situation is definitely praiseworthy and the right thing to do. When you talk about a situation such as this between your mother and a wife, I feel it's a It's a classic case of conflict between the gratitude that you owe and your future aspirations. Like, truce with your wife is most needed for your peaceful future, and taking care of your mother is the gratitude that you owe her, right? But though you not leaving your mother is the right thing, what makes it difficult for men in your position is that the fact that the wife lets go of her family and comes placing all her hopes on the husband. And here I'm speaking of a typical Indian system where still we have the traditions of joint families and the wife living with her husband and his parents in the same home. So to be not able to honor that trust a wife places on you could be equally painful too. So in such a situation, what do we do? I would like to make a few general remarks here for the benefit of all of us, as I always do, depending on the question that's asked. Swami would often say that there are two ways of handling any problem, right? Swami would say it's Shreyas and Prayas, or he would call it the Shreyo Marga or the Prayo Marga. Prayas is the easy but most often the wrong way out of a situation, whereas Shreyas is the right but invariably the difficult way out. Well, it's easier and does not call for much inner strength to choose the easy way out, right? And generally when we are in a problem, we tend to look for solutions or a way out of the problem. And we look for a way out, we are most likely to choose prayers or the easy but wrong option. That's what most of us do, right? When you are desperately looking for a way out, you will take any opening that's available. But what we actually need to do is ask ourselves, what is the most correct thing to do in the given situation? And I hope I'm being clear, because instead of asking what is the way out of the situation, if we can ask ourselves, what is the right thing for me to do in this situation, I think we are most likely to take the Shreyo Marga, the right path. And doing what is right will eventually get us out of that situation. It may take some time, but definitely the result will be good. Now, specific to the question, rather in the situation you are in, there are multiple ways out, and honestly speaking, all of it appears equally painful, hurting your mother, letting your marriage break, or as you said, compromise your self-respect. So when we tend to look for a solution, we may be tempted to think, which one will give me least pain or do least harm, so let me do that. In this situation, the difficult but right way out is, I feel, what you're trying to do right now. Not letting go of your mother, but still trying your best to talk to your in-laws and wife. In a situation like this, only perseverance and patience can help. But it is very important to persevere with patience in the right direction, which I think you are doing, so please continue that. As I said, you trying to save your marriage is also a very right thing to do, because many of the youngsters I've come across, and even some of the people of my own age, if given a solution like this, most of them will quite easily suggest separation or divorce as an option, but because that has become as common as marriage itself, and they think that, that sounds like very good logic. Why hold on to a relationship that gives no happiness? What is the whole point to staying in a marriage that no more gives you happiness? As much as that sounds like a very sensible approach and argument, there is a serious flaw in it. Definitely we have to do things that give us happiness. There is no doubt about it. We do everything in the pursuit of happiness. But what we must remember is, sometimes even happiness must take a back seat. When is that? When there is a conflict between happiness and purpose. Let me give a very, very simple example. When we were children, and say when we were studying in school, there was only one thing that gave us happiness, probably going out and playing with our friends, right? Let us say that the next day I have an exam. Still, my evening will be most happy if I go out and play. But with an exam the next day, the evening will be more purposefully spent if I sit and study for it. So we all have done this. We have foregone happiness for the sake of purpose. And this we do in every small aspect of life. Be it when we are, say, dieting, when we decide to wake up early in the morning, or in the case of mothers who would rather spend their time teaching their children than sitting and watching TV, or fathers who choose to do overtime at work instead of hanging out in a club with their friends. So we all know that pleasure and happiness has to be given second preference when it comes to purpose. And that's why Swami would keep saying, lead purposeful lives. And there's a very, very beautiful connection between pleasure and purpose, but I will not go into that today. But that is in many ways what defines a good human life. But coming back to the topic of discussion, when we talk about marriage, is there a greater purpose to marriage, or is happiness the only purpose of marriage? If we see that happiness alone is the purpose of marriage, we will readily give it up when that happiness starts becoming sparse in a marriage. But truly speaking, marriage has a much, much larger and nobler purpose. I would like to think that way. For example, consider this. Swami has personally performed 2 social ceremonies in huge numbers from the 1940s right till the late 2000s. One is the Upanayanam and the other marriages. We all know that Upanayanam is a spiritual ritual where a boy is initiated into Brahmacharya. If Swami has performed an equal, if not more, number of marriages, doesn't that give us a clue that marriage is a very, very spiritual institution? If it is not spiritual, Swami definitely would not have performed so many marriages. So what makes marriages spiritual? And if that reason can be identified, I feel that is the true purpose of marriage. And the answer is very, very simple. Marriage makes us lead a life in such a way that it takes our attention away from ourselves. Instead of focusing on my likes, my dislikes, my ambitions, my aspirations, we effortlessly start thinking of the other person's needs and desires too, isn't it? In other words, we take the first step from I to we, and this is a very, very essential step in spirituality. And also, the moment a child comes into the picture, into the family, most parents start becoming very careful with their actions and words. It is an automatic disciplining process. And again, this is a shift from what I like to say and do to what I am supposed to say and do. That is why marriages are very important. Swami would often quote a verse from the Vedas. He would say, "Na karma na na prajaya, dane na tyage naike amritatva manasu." The simple meaning of that verse is, immortality is not earned by karma or action through progeny or prajaya, or through accumulation of wealth or dana. It can be earned only through tyaga or sacrifice. But in one of his discourses, Swami gave this very, very beautiful explanation to this very verse. Karma will not give you immortality, Swami said, but doing karma with an attitude of tyaga or sacrifice will give it to you. Children in family life will not give you immortality, but the attitude of sacrifice that one inculcates in family life will lead you to immortality. And of course, finally, Swami says, wealth will not give you immortality, but sacrifice of wealth will give it to you. So our family life gives us an opportunity to develop that attitude of sacrifice. And that's why sometimes it's very important to save a marriage, even when we see that at that point in time, there is no happiness in that family life. Especially when there are children, since it is becoming so common, we don't realize, but children brought up in broken families are definitely affected very deeply. So when handling a strained marriage, I think it's very important not to have separation or divorce as an option on the table at all. This is especially more important for youngsters. Let divorce not be an option at all when you are handling a strained marriage. Yes, of course, in some cases it is inevitable, like in physically and say mentally abusive marriages. But these are, in my opinion, of course, not as common as we imagine. Because when we are in a problem, we imagine that our situation is so much more bad than it really is. Coming back to the question we are discussing today, brother, from what I've said above, there are 2 duties before you that are equally important. One is the duty towards your mother, and the other is the duty towards your little daughter. You have to ensure that you give a good, stable home and family for your child to grow in. And that, I feel, should be the focus of your efforts. I'll try and share with you a few things which I feel can be done in your situation. If you're already doing them, great. Just keep doing it and keep at it. There is no relationship crisis that cannot be sorted with time and a little bit of love. First thing, speak to your mother and give her the confidence that come what may, you will not abandon her. make it very, very clear to her that, you know, that is not even an option, that is not even an option for you. Secondly, yes, from your question, it does appear that your wife is wrong, but there can be an outside chance that your mother too may be wrong in certain issues. But you can't talk about them unless you assure her that it absolutely does not matter if she is right or wrong. You will always take care of her. Sometimes, you know, when we are fixed about the nature of a situation, we may fail to see the whole issue. I'm not saying that your mother is wrong or your wife is wrong, but just approach the problem with the idea that there could be a possibility that my mother may have done something to escalate the issue. You may be able to see the situation and understand it better. It will also give you a little more patience when you deal with your wife. Also, explain to your mother that though her ways about cleanliness and such disciplines is important, I'm just assuming that that was the cause of the friction, it cannot be more important than keeping the family together. Explain that these habits can be learned over years, but a family that breaks now cannot be fixed later. And I feel you must speak to her about your concerns for your daughter, that as a father, you cannot allow her to grow in a broken family. So even if your wife is wrong, you wish to come to a compromise and live with her for the sake of your daughter. Tell her clearly it is not about who is right or wrong. It is about the future of your daughter. The next thing is try talking to your in-laws separately. Now tell them this very point, that whoever has done the mistake, the one who will suffer will be your child, and you don't want that to happen. I believe you would have done this already. If so, please persevere in this. Give them the confidence that as much as you don't wish to give up your mother, you don't want to disappoint your wife too. Try explaining to them also your concerns about your daughter growing up in a broken family. Even if you were to accept their proposal, ask them, wouldn't that be setting a bad example for your daughter, who might think it's absolutely okay to abandon one's parents when they grow up? I know all through my answer I've been very much biased to your duties towards your mother and your daughter, but though I've not spoken enough about it, your duty to give more time and patience to your wife is also equally important. Different people respond differently to different environments. Maybe your wife needs more time to settle. I know a few years is a long time, but still, some people just need more time, and I think at the end of the day, we just have to accept it. Is there any mistake that your mother has done? Do acknowledge it. Don't try to defend her by denying it. Then as patiently as you can, explain to your wife probably what I've said about marriage. If all of us wish to live only our own way, then why would we live in families at all? There is a certain joy in living together, sacrificing for the other, and this joy is worth all the friction that happens in a family. Tell her that you don't want her to change completely and give in to everything that your mother wants, but just to be a little less stubborn. All of us feel very comfortable when at home. No, that's why we say, oh, I feel at home when we feel very comfortable even at a new place. But only a woman has the ability to make every place she enters a home. Remind her that. Finally, tell her that yes, even as a single mother, she will be able to provide for her daughter maybe, but your child will get the best upbringing when she grows up in a normal family. If she is not prepared to give up a little of her comfort and individuality for the sake of her child's life, how then can she expect your mother, who is so old, to adjust for the sake of her son and family? Make it very clear to her, just as you don't wish to give up your mother, you don't wish to give her up too. It is not the question of who is right, she or your mother, but the question is, what is the best thing to do in the situation that all of you are in? And certainly living alone in freedom is not better than living together, even if it means lesser freedom for all. As parents, don't we all sacrifice so much for the sake of our children? And we are happy doing that, right? Tell her to consider this also as one among those sacrifices. I'm just saying points which occur to me, but the way you explain it to her has to be based on her nature and, you know, what you feel would strike her more. I remind you again, be very patient. If you already are patient, be a little more patient than that. So in general, try to keep your daughter as the focus of your solution, for that is the right thing to do. Even if you have to make a few compromises in the process, don't hesitate. So in many ways, I think you're doing the right thing, but continue to persevere. especially relationship problems, can be sorted only by giving time and energy. So to conclude, just to summarize what I've said so far, taking care of your mother is certainly a duty you can't give up, but also try not to keep separation or divorce as an option. And keep in mind that the idea of having a stable family is to give children you have brought into the world the right environment to grow in. As parents, you owe it to your daughter. So keeping that in mind, try first talking to your mother, as I said, after giving her the confidence that come what may, you will never abandon her. Then try to speak to your in-laws, and then finally to your wife, and tell your wife also the same. Just as you don't wish to give up your duties as a son, even if your mother is wrong, you don't wish to give up your wife and child too. If you're already doing all this, then all I can say is you're doing the right things in the situation you're in. Just persevere with patience. I am absolutely sure Swami will do what is best for all of you. Thank you, brother, for writing to us. I hope you've got some points to think about and act in the situation that you are in. The next question I wish to take up today is from a person from the state of Odisha. Though the person did not tell me not to mention his name, well, I have decided not to. I'll have Brother Ganesh read out the question sent to this person. Well, after you listen to the question, let's see what we can come up as a discussion for the answer.
Om Sai Ram. I am facing a professional problem since last 5 years. I had started a pharma company in September 2007, mortgaging my parental house. Initially, I had taken a loan of 20 lakhs. In 2009, we further took a loan of 40 lakhs as per the need of the company and its expansion. Since 2009, we have been facing a lot of problems. There was a huge issue that Swami saved us from then. The details of it I will not be able to explain here. But ever since, we found it very, very difficult to recover any investments we made in the market. The situation has continued till 2011. In 2011, once again, we took another loan of 18 lakhs, which makes it 68 lakhs in all. But same situation continued. In 2012, we closed all operations of our company, and from then on, I have started looking for a job. And my brother started a transport business, taking one more loan of 35 lakhs, taking our total loan amount to 1 crore. Our bank loan EMIs alone was coming up to 1.3 lakhs. After closing the company, I have been looking for jobs, but as I am unable to produce a certificate of experience, and since nobody is ready to give a job based on my own company's work experience certificate, and also because it did not have any a national presence, I am not able to get a job. Those who know about my company are not ready to trust me. If I try to prepare a CV without mentioning my company, I do get shortlisted for interviews and negotiations, but they never get back after that. I have appeared in over 100 interviews so far. Neither am I getting a job, nor am I finding a solution out of the situation. Now it has come to the point where we have not been able to pay bank EMIs for 4 months, which is around 5.5 lakhs for loans and 3 lakhs of vehicle EMIs. During this period, I have tried for a job in Puttaparthi Super Speciality Hospital too, but I am not getting an opportunity. I was staying in Parthi for 3 months, hoping I will get a job here, but I know it is not easy to get there. Some of my brothers working in Puttaparthi finally advised me to go back to my hometown and continue trying there. My question is, when will I get released from all these problems? I am following all Bhagwan's instructions with dedication. I regularly do Rudram and Vedam chanting, Gayatri Mantra chanting. I regularly do Seva attend all samiti activities, regularly read Sai literature. Still, I don't know why I face all these problems regularly. I don't know where I am wrong. I am hoping to get some solution from my beloved Lord. Sai Ram.
Thank you, brother, for sending us that question. First of all, I really hope and pray no one gets themselves into such a situation. Really feel sorry for you. I'd like to discuss this question in three parts. One, as always, in general, about such situations regarding debts and loans. Second, now that you are in this situation, what are your options? What can and what should you do? And lastly, the question you asked right at the end, when I've been doing bhajans, chanting Vedam and doing seva, how come I have landed myself in such a situation? First, as I said, general comments about this business of debts, EMIs and so on. I know, brother, that what is past is past, but I'd like to talk a little about it for your own understanding of where you really went wrong and for the benefit of some of our other listeners, especially the younger generation. You know, there is a complete shift in the way we look at debts and loans these days. In the past, when I say past, even during, say, my parents' generation, this idea of owing money to someone or the banks was always considered as a taboo. There was a certain kind of social stigma around it. Though it was not illegal in that sense to take loans, people in the community will always look down upon people who have debts. And in many ways, that would keep people away from taking loans unnecessarily. And if at all anyone does take a loan, it will only be for some emergency. But now, the situation has changed altogether. More than seeing how much we are earning, we tend to see our credit worthiness. I am earning so much, so how much loan am I eligible for? I am getting a salary of 30,000-40,000, so how much home loan can I avail? How much personal loan can I avail? We literally rate our success on the basis of that. So you see the difference. What was a social stigma has now become a social status symbol. In the past, there will be, say, one rich man in a village or a town who will be a money lender, or there would be small banks. So they would give loans only to people who they are sure will return the money. But nowadays, it is not like that. When, let's say, a bank sells you a loan, the bank makes money. So the more loans they give out, the more money they make. So the banks will always encourage you to take more loans and will give you the idea that you are more creditworthy than you actually are. Like in the case of this person who has asked us the question, 20 years ago, possibly a bank would not have given a loan so large. But now, banks are ready to take more risks. Why? Because banks have come up with so many complicated financial products through which the banks make money, even if you fail to repay. They get themselves insured against loans, then sell those insurance to investors or create things like asset-backed securities, collateralized debt obligations, which again they sell away. If you wish to, please go and read about them, especially the youngsters. What I'm trying to say is, the banks do not necessarily lose if you don't repay a loan that you take. But the bank always makes money when they give you a loan. So because of that, banks will always try to give you more loans. They will make suggestive ads. They will say, make your business grow big, take a loan. Why are you living in a small house? Take a big, you know, home loan and live in a bigger house. It is up to us to draw a line, because the more greedy we get, the more we will get drawn by these plans. Essentially, this whole system strives on our greed to grow fast in life. The greed to enjoy comforts even before we have actually really earned them. See, Swami would often say, develop ceiling on desires. Swami never said give up all your desires at once and become a sannyasi. In fact, Swami never advocated that for all of us. But he always spoke about ceiling on desires. What does that really mean? Swami would often talk about the four purusharthas in life, right? Or the four goals that man must pursue in life. They are dharma, artha, kama and moksha. I think most of us who are familiar with Swami's literature will know these words. But the beauty is, it says it is not wrong to acquire wealth or artha, and it is not wrong to pursue and fulfill your desires or kama. But note the order in which these words are mentioned. There is a very important message in that itself. There is nothing wrong in earning artha. But artha should be earned through dharma or righteous means. That is why dharma and then artha. And your desires must be fulfilled with that artha which has been dharmically earned. That is why dharma, artha and then kama. So isn't that so clearly given to us? Work hard, earn through your hard work, and the money that is earned through your hard work, spend it to fulfill your aspirations. But now, what do? As soon as we get a job, we buy a car. EMI will pay for that, you know, pay for it for the next 5 years. We buy a home. EMI will pay for the next 20 years. We buy a mobile, and EMIs go on for the next few months. So now do you see what is the mistake we do? Instead of fulfilling our desires from the money earned, we are enjoying them with the money we are going to earn. This is not legally wrong. This is not even socially wrong nowadays because everyone is doing it. But it is spiritually wrong. So I feel to follow ceiling on desires, even if we start with this much of only fulfilling desires from the money we have already earned, it will be such a great step in the present context. So I say this especially to youngsters and those in the middle age who wish to lead a spiritual life. This way of living on loans, credit cards and EMIs has something fundamentally wrong in them. As much as possible, please avoid it. To the listener who has asked this question, brother, you might say, but I took loans for business, not for any comforts. Even then, why not have the patience to grow slowly? Why not start a small company, work hard, and then make it grow with your own investment instead of taking such huge loans? See, it is almost like a gamble. There are 50% chances that you will succeed and 50% chances that you will fail. Also, when you put that kind of money that comes purely from your hard work, you're not investing money. You're investing your hard work that is represented by this money. And believe me, the chances of that investment failing is much, much lesser than such loans. It all starts with this desire and impatience to grow fast in life. I'm not saying just for you. All of us have this desire and it is nothing but greed or lobha, which Swami would call as one of the inner enemies or Arshadvargas, the six inner enemies. And as Swami would say, in Kali Yuga, all of these flaws are in everyone, but in such subtle forms. Not all of us will be like Duryodhana, an embodiment of lobha, but lobha is present in such very subtle forms. And it is to counter these qualities, Swami tells us to practice teachings like ceiling on desires. So though it appears to you that you have not done anything wrong, this is a very subtle mistake. And in some ways, let me tell you, brother, you are lucky too. But I'll come to that in the later part of my answer. Okay, but now you are in this situation. And so now, what do you do? First of all, if you have any assets like property that you can liquidate, your vehicle that you bought through your loans, liquidate them and reduce your debt. Certainly do that. Treat your debt, however small or big, as a burden and try to get rid of it. Don't lose hope. You will definitely get a job. Just keep trying and praying to Swami. There is no right way out of this situation which will be easy and simple. But remember, Swami can change anything in no time. Sometimes problems such as these will have no immediate perceivable solution. You just have to hang in there and keep doing the right things. The situation will certainly improve eventually. I'll give one more reason why this loan and credit culture is so dangerous spiritually. As we have heard Swami say many, many times, the most important thing is to lead a dharmic life, right? If we make up our mind to keep our desires within the limits of the money we have earned righteously, even if we have to lead a simple life, we will not be under undue pressure to take to a dharmic or immoral ways. But when we start spending today what we think we will earn tomorrow, you are forced to earn money to pay for what you have already enjoyed. So you are working in a company, say. You will end up doing all that it takes to retain your job, or will be ready, as in your case, to even manipulate your CV to get a job. That's one more reason that this idea of spending through loans and EMIs is wrong. And as I told you before, a more righteous thing to do is to work hard, earn, save, and then spend. Now, in your situation, brother, there will be certainly that temptation to take the shorter route out. Be very careful of that and avoid that under all conditions. Even if telling about your company reduces the chances of you getting a job, do be honest. It's only a matter of time before things start turning around. Finally, I want to come to the point you made in the end. I have been doing bhajans, chanting Vedam, going for seva and so on. But why did this happen to me? Point number one, all of us tend to think we are doing these things for Swami and so Swami owes us His grace in return. But the fact is, Swami gets absolutely nothing but by us doing any of these activities. We do them for our own benefit. And they are benefits in themselves. They are not, you know, they are not to give benefits in the future necessarily. They are not like our investments. Swami says sadhana is for the present, not for the future. But I do agree that we all pray or go to temple or do charity with some desire or hope in mind. But there are two things we need when we are in a problem. One is the situation around us has to improve. We pray for that. The other is we need inner strength to face our problems. So though we sometimes involve ourselves in all these activities thinking Swami will protect us from such problems, which Swami definitely does to some extent, but more importantly, when we do bhajans, chant Vedam, do seva, we are becoming stronger from within. When we go to Swami and say, Swami, I am your devotee, Swami will say, then you have to do namasmarana, chant Vedam, do seva. But all this is not for His sake. But when we do all these things, we start getting purified from within, and that purity will give us strength and courage to face situations boldly. And why did I tell you that you are in a sense lucky to go through this? Swami is giving you an opportunity to recognize where you went wrong. Let us say that after all your investments, your business did well. You will never get an opportunity to recognize that this attitude of wishing to grow fast was wrong. But please don't take it that I'm saying it is good your business failed. But when such bad things happen to us, when we are in Swami's fold, it is a very good opportunity for us to look at the problems sportively and learn from it. Always keep in mind, Swami is there to protect you. Things may appear very, very bad, but it is always under Swami's control. With that hope and confidence in your mind, when you face your problems, you will be able to learn the right lessons and grow from that experience. And that is the blessing of having devotion to Swami. That inner strength comes with doing bhajans, chanting Vedam, and all the other things that you just mentioned. So none of these will ever go in vain. Just to summarize, there's nothing wrong in aspiring to grow, to lead a comfortable life and to provide such comforts to your family, but ensure that the money you spend comes from righteous hard work and not from loans and EMIs. Save from your salary and then spend it. To keep your desires within the money you earn righteously is itself a very good place to start sailing on desires. And if we wish to lead a spiritual life, this is something very, very important. Just because it is a social norm, don't get drawn into this. It's nothing but being led to ruin by our own greed. Second point I made was directly for the brother who asked us the question. Now that you're in the situation, firstly, try to reduce the burden of your debt, even if it means selling off some of your property. Consider any form of debt as a burden and nothing but that. I know there is always a credit cycle in business. I'm not referring to that. Any borrowing that you do with the idea to grow fast is what I'm referring to. Secondly, avoid the temptation of taking immoral steps. Keep trying sincerely and honestly for a job. Even if it takes time, you will surely get a job and things will surely improve. Lastly, don't entertain this thought, I did so much for Swami, what have I got in return? We suffer because of our mistakes. But when in Swami's fold, Swami gives us the opportunity to correct ourselves. For that, keep your mind with the right attitude. All the bhajans, Vedam and Seva that you've done have certainly made you strong from within. Believe that Swami is in control. Keep telling yourself, you and Swami together will surely come out of this problem. And in the meanwhile, keep trying to do what I've said above. With prayers to Swami, hoping that He solves your problem and protects you from doing anything wrong, I thank you, brother, for sending us your question. with that, listeners, it's a wrap for this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. I'll join you again next week with new questions. Do you have a question that you would like me to answer for you? Do send it across then. I invite questions directly to my mail ID. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. But just make sure your questions are about practical day-to-day issues like the ones that you heard in this program today and not purely philosophical or esoteric ones. Also, let me know if you wish that I don't reveal your name, and I'll keep to that. And if you could record your question and send it to me, that would be just amazing. Then I can play your question on the program directly. With humility, I offer this week's show at Swami's Lotus Feet. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Raghu for the next segment of the day, which is on Seva. At 12:30, I'll be back with Brother Arvind for afternoon satsang. But I'll join you all next week again at 11 a.m. for the next episode of Way to Sai Answering Booth.
Oh.